And you are rolling and streaming.
Good evening. This is a special meeting of the Morro Bay Harbor Advisory Board. It's Thursday, October 8th, 5:30 p.m. This is a Zoom meeting. And let's start off. Lori, would you take roll, please?
Lynn Myerson?
Here.
Jean Dowdy? Cherise Hansen?
Here.
Dana McClish?
Here.
Kate Griffin?
Here.
And we know that Mark Blackford will not be attending.
So we have a quorum, and we'll call the meeting to order. Do we have any public comments? Do we have any hands up, or have we received any?
Mr. Chair, we have one person in the queue with their hand up. That's one of your members. Nobody in the queue has their hand up at this time. There is a caller just showed up, and Marla McPherson's there. If you want to raise your hand, you're on a phone, you have to push star 9. And it doesn't look like anybody's putting their hand up.
Okay, well, we have three agenda items this evening.
Oh, they just put their hand up.
Okay.
All right, would you like me to...
Let's bring them in.
Okay. Caller with the phone number ending in 944, you're on the air.
Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Okay, who's this?
This is Ron Reisner. I'm the chair of the Harbor Advisory Board.
Ron, this is Gene.
Oh, hi, Gene.
Okay.
I'm trying to get in, but I can't even open up the agenda on my computer, so I'm doing it by phone.
Okay, well, we're delighted to have you. Thank you. All right, Zeke, anybody else?
No, sir. That was it.
Okay, then we'll commence with agenda item number 1. Mr. Endersby?
Thank you, and welcome to the special meeting of the HAB. A week later than normal, but looks like we've got everybody just about, except for maybe Mark. So this is mostly an informational item. We have the city manager, Scott Collins, standing by here as well to provide his input towards the end, we'll see. Kind of looking at our budget, economic impacts of the pandemic on our budget, with all the shutdowns that have occurred. Looking at some of the things that the city's been doing, the Rock Solid Together program, financial and economic recovery programs, and outlooks for the next fiscal year. So our budget is, as you know, we're running on the fiscal year, so our budget year ended June 30th. It takes a couple months for finance to get all the final paperwork and all the numbers in and even out the numbers and get things to the point where they're ready to be audited by the city's auditors, and we're about at that point. So the numbers are generally in. There may be some final changes towards the end, but the numbers I've got for tonight are probably pretty darn close. So our actual revenues came in about $220,000 under budgeted. Of that, about $100,000 is deferred rents from the last fiscal year, meaning leaseholders that weren't able to pay their rent for whatever reason, and we allowed them to not pay without being penalized or any kind of late fees established on them. And so there's about $100,000 of those still outstanding. So we could see some of that or all that come back over time. We're working with the leaseholder group right now to try and iron that out, but that's yet to be seen. Total revenues received, the percent gross rents came in about $280,000, almost $281,000 less than, or came in at $280,000, where we had budgeted $427,000. So we had about a 34% shortfall in percent gross revenues across the board.
And that budget was a function of fiscal 1920, is that correct?
Fiscal 1920. So some leaseholders came in with their percent gross even with or even above last year's. Some came in quite a bit lower. And so, you know, without going into details, which I really shouldn't on who did well and who didn't, We came in about 34% low in percent gross. On the expense end, I always think we pride ourselves as being a pretty thrifty department, and we treat the money like our own and to try not to spend excessively. But when COVID hit, the city hit its emergency plan, emergency financial plan, which put a lot of stopgaps in place, and we stopped a lot of spending. We came in about $110,000 under budgeted on the expense end. That's a combination of austerity programs, not spending money, a layoff. Roger, our maintenance aide, has gone to a volunteer basis, so we're not paying that position. Attrition, meaning, when Charlie moved on to a rec, and then Sherry came on halftime, and Sherry moved on to another full-time job elsewhere, we have not filled that position, so not really a layoff, but a position unfilled, so that remains unfilled. And then again, cutting all but the absolute most critical spending, which is doable on a one-time basis, but in the long run really isn't going to be sustainable without some level of service cuts. So we made it through the year. The bottom line net for the Harbor Fund was we had to pull about $70,000 from the accumulation fund to make ourselves whole. In other words, we're in the red about $70,000 net. The good news of that is if you consider the roughly $100,000 of percent gross, or of $100,000 of deferred rents still carried on the books, if you were to consider those paid in full for that fiscal year, we'd be about $30,000 in the black for the year. Whatever the solution for those deferred rents is, they will not come into this past fiscal year because those books will probably be audited and closed, so there'll be a little bit of a quote-unquote bonus onto this year's.
Eric, for the benefit of the public, would you identify the calendar period for the city's fiscal year, please?
So the fiscal year, every fiscal year runs July 1st to June 30th of the following year. So we're currently in the 2021 fiscal year, which started July 1st. So these numbers are all the 1920 fiscal year, meaning July 1, 2019 to June 30th, 2020. That's what all these revenue numbers are from. As I spoke earlier, we're working with a leaseholder group on those deferred rents. We've met with them several times. Back in the 90s, there was an official leaseholder nonprofit group that used to meet with the city and iron things out and deal with issues that dissolved probably the mid-90s, late early 2000s. Well, it's reformed largely out of the pandemic and the economic effects and how we're going to move forward with deferred rents and then potentially what we may do with other rents into the future. The leaseholder or the lease update, lease policy update group, as you know, met to discuss the deferred rents and potential solutions for how we're going to deal with the deferred rents and came up with a few different options. And those options were full payback over some time period, penalty and interest free. A percent gross based solution where maybe only percent, the actual percents generated would be paid as opposed to the minimum rents. As you know, some lease sites pay a minimum rent and a percent gross on top. Some just pay minimum. But some of our percent gross rent payers traditionally that have been traditional percent gross payers, may be something below that. So looking for maybe some in-between methodology there. Rent relief, meaning some degree of rent actually waived. Or reduction in future rents, based on some metric of the economy or how the pandemic goes. So those are all things in the mix being considered. Nothing's been agreed upon yet. Anything ultimately has to go to the city council. And we're working on that and hopefully get that something to the council in the next month or two. Business-wise, on the waterfront, it looks like we've got about four that have fallen victim to the pandemic. Junk Love and Marina Square may have been other factors for that as well. Indy Collective at the Harbor Center was a relatively new startup there. When that little building on the backside of Harbor Center got redeveloped and added on last year. Blooming Day Rose Spot, the Boatyard lease site, which was another relative newcomer that had just gotten opened up. After that whole seawall thing got finished and they got opened back up, they came into business there, so they were relatively new. And the Coffee Pot restaurant at Giovanni's. Not the Coffee Pot wasn't on a lease site. The lease there really only incorporates about half of the fish market building itself, but Coffee Pot is on the waterfront, and that they closed as well. Any questions on that? I guess maybe I'll stop there at the budget point, see if there's any questions or...
So I'm going to go down the line as we usually do. Sharice, comments or questions so far?
Not so far.
Dana? I can't hear you.
None.
Lynn?
None.
Peter?
None.
Gene?
None.
Eric, when in the expenses section, when you commented that the reduction in the budget is not sustainable in the long term, what key service elements that could be impacted? Harbor Department key service elements.
Well, I mean, I don't want to speculate. I mean, it'll ultimately be up to, you know, city council and city management going through a list of potential expense items. You know, we've got fixed expenses, insurance, utilities. There's not a lot we can do with those. You know, the vast majority of our expenses, like any government, is in personnel. You know, we've got debt service, which is only going on. We've got this year, which we just pay, you know, our rent payment for our loan payment for the South T Pier comes in like August. So we just paid that. There's only one more year left on that. That's $135,000. So that will help greatly. But really, it's cuts in services. I mean, we've already, you know, fortunately, we've got Roger back on a volunteer basis, which is wonderful. But, you know, it means it's personnel. It's closing restrooms. It's lifeguards. It's harbor patrol. You know, the fixed expenses you can't do much with. They are what they are. So, you know, I don't want to speculate. And we've not developed a prioritized list at this point, although we're starting to think about it, or we'll be starting to think about it. That's the kind of things we're looking at.
Is it correct?
I would be concerned about the maintenance of your vehicles, the boats and the trucks.
Was that a question, Gene, or a comment?
It was a comment.
Okay. So, Eric, does that mean that the principally the variable costs as opposed to the fixed costs for the Harbor Department and its operations are personnel?
Well, personnel is a quote-unquote a variable cost. It's like I said, the fixed costs are the fixed costs. There's not a lot we can do with them. You know, I can't just stop paying the electric bill or the water bill. I guess we could shut off water to where we service water, which means restrooms, those sorts of things. You know, the our biggest expense, like every government's biggest expense, isn't personnel. You know, we're already one person down. I don't want to speculate too much. We're, you know, moving into the future and how we're managing the leases and potentially looking at continued in-house versus contracted management of the leases. That is probably going to be the biggest next determinant in deciding what direction our department is going from a staffing standpoint. And that may spell where we go and sort of figure out how we're funded.
Okay, thank you. My next question is, you mentioned that $70,000 was pulled from the accumulation fund. What's the current balance remaining?
Oh, you would ask a question like that. I don't have that at my fingertips. I want to say our accumulation fund balance right now is 500 and some odd thousand, with things already earmarked for beach street slips and a couple other projects. So, you know, when Corona hit and everything started shutting down, we made a conscious decision to put the brakes on all capital projects, just left them in the budget earmarked, didn't take the money and do anything with it, just left it there, not knowing how we were going to get through this. So at least with this year, we've needed $70,000. But like I said, $100,000 is still deferred. That may come back in this fiscal year. We just don't know what the final solution for that's going to be.
Am I correct in saying that historically the application of the accumulation fund has been infrastructure?
Yeah, infrastructure and equipment. That's I'm trying to remember back. You know, when the power plant announced its closure, you know, we had a couple of years of still getting the $275,000 that we didn't. We only used the minimum amount we needed to balance the operating budget for a couple of years until we weaned ourselves off of that. But in my history of working with as department director, we've not had to dip into the accumulation fund and treat it as a reserve fund or an emergency fund. I don't know if we've done that in the past or not. We may have.
From the Harbor Department's perspective, what are the three most pressing issues that the department would look to the accumulation fund to finance?
Well, it's the things that have been on the list. Beach Street slips and a couple of projects on the T-Pairs are my biggest capital projects right now. Patrol boat, as you know, we're working on, but so far we've gotten a grant and we've got the friends doing some fundraising. We'll see how much we need to dip in for that. But it's really the Beach Street slips and the two T-Pairs and then follow on slips and other public pier stuff that needs to start coming after that.
Okay. And in your section, your report section, the COVID pandemic-related lease rent issues, you've listed four options that the working group, that the leaseholder working group is has identified. Which are looked at with the most favor by the leasehold group out of those four?
I think they're all still on the table. You know, they're just newly formed, so they're still, you know, getting their feet on the ground and getting all their members in and being active. I probably couldn't or wouldn't say any one of the four is on or off the table at this point. They did bring another thing to the table, which was some sort of consideration of the cost they've incurred, which I'll talk about later. The cost they've incurred on having to comply with all these COVID closures, meaning PPE and screens and, you know, different hard costs they've had. So they've brought that to the table as potentially something to reduce their rents by the cost that they've had for those sorts of things.
Okay. And my last question on these sections of your report, the fourth bullet item says reduction of future rents based on some metric of the economy and status of the pandemic. What sort of metrics are being discussed?
I think we'd be looking, you know, I think sort of like they're being looked at as triggers, you know, if you know, looking back at, you know, pre-pandemic, past 3 years, maybe average the sales tax out and that the city received on a gross basis, and then if the future sales tax reaches some percentage of that, maybe then at that point you'd start reducing. If you cut rents by some amount and said, okay, when sales tax at large within the city reaches, you know, and I'm just making this up, this isn't anything we're discussing in this kind of detail, if sales tax at large reaches 80% of what it was in the last three-year average, well, then maybe the rent reduction cuts back to something else and sort of a tiered scale based on sales tax or TOT or some combination thereof.
Okay, thank you. So, please proceed.
If I may interrupt, I'd like to confirm that Mark Blackford has joined the meeting.
Mark,
welcome.
Mark, are you there?
Go ahead, Eric.
Well, his name and numbers there, so we'll see. So so the things the city's been doing, and I think I covered some of this stuff on the last meeting, the last special meeting we had, or the regular meeting back in September. It's been dubbed the Rock Solid Recovery Plan, the Rock Solid Plan developed by staff and the council. You know, the general fund was projecting a $2 million loss from the last fourth quarter of the last fiscal year. And up to $4 million in this current fiscal year, which equated about a 30% loss of revenues to the general fund overall. The Harbor Fund outlook not dissimilar in terms of scale to our $2 million budget. Compared to that, in this year's budget, I projected a 50% decrease in percent gross revenues from what I had projected in last year, just to be very precautionary and very conservative. And from the rest of the revenues, all the slips and moorings and all the other fees, we projected about a 25% less revenues coming from that. With all those revenue reductions, you know, we submitted a balanced budget, but again, it's without a position, full-time position still being filled, and we're balanced to the tune of about $25,000-$30,000. So obviously not enough to be putting any money in the piggy bank for the capital programs. With all that backdrop, the city developed a two-pronged approach to addressing all the financial issues facing the city. Prong one, as you see in the staff report, business and community assistance, working very closely with the chamber and a lot of business members. The city council has approved a bunch of different measures to help our businesses and help our city get through this. On our list is deferral of the Titans lease payments. With the resolution pending that we spoke about a minute ago, the city's allowed deferral of transient occupancy tax, TOT payments, to the city for the months of February and March of 2020 until August of this year, waiving all penalties for business tax fees, water and sewer bills, and those sorts of things. The city council, affirmed a state of emergency, which enacted all sorts of different rules and regulations regarding eviction relief and eviction moratorium, price gouging, and those sorts of things. Prong two was city government services. Employee compensation was reduced. All the employee groups have now agreed to employee reduction, I think pretty much 5% across the board. I think department heads took a little more. Review prioritization of operations, really cut back on operations that weren't absolutely necessary to try and cut on costs. I think Recreation Department probably took the largest hit with all the different programs that they do, because those programs largely involve gatherings of people. So they cut back pretty severely. Use of emergency reserves, we don't really have an emergency reserve fund. As you know from, I think, a couple budget years ago, a Harbor Emergency Reserve Fund was established, but it's got nothing in it right now because our accumulation isn't even where we want it. So we dipped into our accumulation as our emergency reserve. And then pursuing state and federal assistance, which we've gotten some of that. On the employee compensation end, all groups have taken some cuts. Hiring freezes, hiring chills, any hiring had to go through the city manager for approval, and really only core safety positions have been approved to be filled. Said we're still down one, but those things that provide safe water and public safety, obviously we can't, that's the city's absolute core responsibility, providing those things, so they continue to be provided. But a lot of other vacancies across the city board, with us not having that position filled, it's been a strain on our department. Lori and Becca and myself and our officers are all trying to take up the slack for all the other things that aren't getting done by that position. Travel, no city-related travel outside of Slo County really has been allowed. Most conferences and my annual Harbor Masters conference was canceled, so I wouldn't have gone to that anyhow, even if it wasn't canceled. So really, unless it's absolutely essential travel, it's all been eliminated. Say the city laid off about 70 temporary employees and some part-time employees, like primarily in recreation. We've cut back on our reserve program to a degree. Not filling as many Harbor Patrol reserve hours as we have. So fair amount of cuts, I think 14% full-time employee equivalents. So it's a pretty big cut to a city that's got a little less than 100 employees. Like I said earlier, we saved in expenses about $110,000. We just went through every line item and anything that absolutely didn't have to get done. Didn't get done, and so we've been watching those expenses very closely, and then cut back on a lot of expenses doing this year's budget as well, in our approved budget. So done pretty well there. The city attorney's office took a voluntary cut to their fees, and reduce their hourly rates, and they continue to provide that. We're getting a pretty good deal from the city attorney's office. The visitor center contract was canceled, and the city's kind of running the visitor service for the most part, those kind of services, once that shelter at home order went in place. So lots of cuts across the board. Again, emergency reserves, we've dipped in a little bit. 70,000 is what we needed. Hopefully we get that back if we get our rents back, depending on how things recover. The city, the general fund, I think, used about $1 million in emergency reserves last year to make up the difference in the shortfall in this year. We just don't know how it's going to end. Pillar four of that stage is state and federal assistance. The first round of federal aid didn't, I don't think, really reach to the city level. It got to states and counties, but never really reached the city level. We've been eligible to receive about $125,000 in CARES fund for whatever qualifying purposes they are. Mostly it's hard costs, personal protective equipment, those sorts of things, public safety response and messaging. So hopefully we'll be able to get some refund out of that. I don't know what portion of that will go to the Harbor Fund. I don't think it's been determined to that granular level yet. So that's been the assistance that's come from the state and federal government. We've submitted some fairly extensive requests to FEMA, to Federal Emergency Management, to offset a lot of our COVID expenditures. Again, most of those will probably be hard expenses. PPE, rental of those big mobile electric signs, those sorts of things. We've not got any FEMA reimbursement. That typically takes a year to three to really come to fruition. So we'll continue to see what happens there. Any questions on that section?
Dean?
No.
Peter?
No.
Lynn?
Yes, I have a question. When salaries cuts were taken, does that affect the benefits as well, or do all benefits remain at the same cost as before?
The benefits that the employee receives remain the same, but the benefits, and I don't know the exact formulas, but benefits have a metric tied to the pay. So depending on the position and whether it's public safety or not public safety, some of the benefits allocated are based on the pay rate. So when the pay rate goes down, the benefits go down. Benefit costs go down, I should say.
Right. Thank you.
Yep. Dana?
None.
Charisse?
I have some. Okay. So I have a couple, but the first one that I'm going to ask is that because of COVID, has the Harbor office noticed any new tech that has helped with job efficiency that they can carry on throughout after COVID and during, that's worked really well?
That's an interesting question, Therese. I suspect like businesses across the world have discovered this Zoom format, online meetings, works pretty well for some things. So I suspect we'll continue with some level of that. I don't know how much of a cost savings that may be. Outside of that, our doors are locked, but we still deal with the public out front. So that's not really seen any sort of savings in that regard. So I guess the short answer to your question would probably be no, nothing much. I mean, Harbor Patrol is Harbor Patrol. That's being out on the water and boats and the beach and people. There's really no way that technology we've discovered through this process is going to change that. And management of our leases is management of our leases. It's mostly pushing paper and money and computer buttons, so probably not.
Are you able to use any of, because a lot of times the phone calls that come in or the people who come in, you have to ask some of the people that are on running up and down, or they're on the boats and you do it through a walkie-talkie or whatever it is. But is there a way, like, you can field these calls rather than having to have a middle person be the recipient of the phone call or the person at the desk, and then therefore, is there any way that you've found a way to just get them directly to the person who can answer the question instead of having a middle person?
Well, you know, between, for the most part, unless somebody calls and asks for Becca or Eric or something, you know, and which just get it to them however you get it to them. Mm-hmm. Everyone is, you know, we're very well-rounded in our department. There's no compartmentalization. We don't have divisions. You know, I don't have a maintenance division, this division, that division, and, oh, let me send you to maintenance. Everyone's gotten very good because everyone lives in the same 900 square feet, and we all are in each other's business all the time. So I think everyone's pretty good at knowing the answers to the questions, even though it may not be, you know, I'll use Lori, for instance. Been around long enough, seen enough, where if somebody calls on the phone or on the radio and asks about something sort of Harbor Patrol related, usually she's able to answer it. And the same with me and Beck and everybody. Most people are able to answer the questions because they've been around long enough and they've seen it, and they're able to field it, unless it's somebody asking for a specific person. So I think we've gotten pretty good at that.
Okay. Another thing that I brought up before is about the kiosk or having a possible way to get some money. And I know that you're talking about, like, parking. Is there anything that you guys are working on? I know that you're working on the parking, but as far as, like, having a kiosk where they have to drive in to the Rock and pay a fee to go and enjoy the state park, and then therefore that fee helps pay for lifeguards and maintenance and garbage and bathrooms. Has anything arisen as far as budget for the next year with that?
I'll chime in here. We have a parking study underway. Hi, I'm Scott Collins, city manager. And we've done the first leg of that study, which was looking at parking data for a peak week and weekend, which would be summer. And then we're going to do a follow-up probably in November, December, because this may not be a typical November, December, or off-season, if you will. So we want to try to replicate as much as we can what we saw prior to COVID. That information will be very helpful in determining kind of what our true parking demand is and what potential management practices could be adopted to help address that. Really, your parking management is to drive economic vitality and also create turnover and make sure that people have access to the coastline. That's what Coastal Commission cares most about. So anything where we would be making it more difficult for folks on the lower income strata to enjoy the coastline, we'll face intense scrutiny from the Coastal Commission, as will any kind of revenue generation for the city. So there has to be direct ties from those revenues to the services provided to the residents and visitors. So we have to make a pretty strong case today that the demand is there, which I think it is, and then B, that the revenues are really driven back into providing those services. I think we can make that case. But there is still a lot of work to do before we do that. So I've been in touch with Coastal Commission staff and some commissioners about it just to make sure they understand what we're trying to achieve. This isn't an attempt to put money into the city's coffers. Really, it is to pay for itself, but also help drive economic vitality and provide important services to our communities and visitors. So, again, it'll probably take the better part of the rest of this year to complete the study. And early next year, outreach to stakeholders, including hopefully waterfront businesses, as well as regular community members, and then presentations to the Public Works Advisory Body, potentially HAB, as well as City Council, obviously. So then it would go, if there's approval and support for paid parking, then it would need to move on to Coastal Commission before it could be implemented. So I think with that all being said, I don't foresee us bringing any money in from parking this fiscal year. At the earliest, it would be next fiscal year.
Okay. Speaking a little side note as far as, like, where I think the money should really go and point it at this time is that I know the lifeguards around now or a little bit further on, they usually get pulled and there's no lifeguard on duty at the rock. Is that, anyway, what I'm saying is that we should definitely spend the money for a lifeguard on duty through the winter, because there's just so many people that are visiting, and it would be just a travesty to have somebody hurt themselves when they go out there, because they're just not used to going onto the ocean, and a lifeguard would be really important about saving lives and helping our little town not have a really bad accident happen.
Well, Charisse, I think you identified the key items out there, or the cost items that would be perfectly reasonable in my simple mind to go to the commission and say, the cities need some help with this, or they're not going to be available, and that's lifeguard, garbage, and bathroom.
Exactly.
Yeah. Pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
And Charisse, I'm going to kind of answer the previous question you had. Any tech we've learned. This really isn't. It's sort of COVID related, but not directly. The RV program. I'll talk about this more in that item, but it's in the cloud. There's a program in the cloud that we've employed. It's called Bonfire, that takes the reservations, and people pay through it, and it's pretty cool. And it's an app-based system. It was subscription basis, and we use it, and we're currently using it on our phones, but it's kind of hard to do on a little phone, so we're going to transfer over to a tablet of some sort, and hopefully also move our we call our dockage, our daily checking of our boats and seeing who's in our slips. Currently it's manual on paper, and it's very clunky and quite antiquated, to say the least. So hopefully out of this, mostly out of the RV program is what drove it, but we'll be moving that over into an electronic format, which the downloading of that directly into our billing program, that will definitely save a lot of time, as opposed to taking up a piece of paper and then getting it into the computer, and then the computer puts it into the billing program. We go straight to the billing program. We're looking at trying to implement something like that. So that could come out of this one.
Definitely. That sounds good. And then when you did this, have you done the numbers for the camping for last month? Have you figured out, is that above what you were budgeting, what you thought, expectations-wise?
I don't think we had any predetermined expectations, just coming out of summer and not knowing where we were going to land and when we were going to get it going. I'll talk about the numbers a little bit more when I get to that. That's item two, next item coming up.
Yeah. Okay. Next item.
Eric, I have a couple of questions. In prong one, item one, deferral of title and trust lease payments to the city with a resolution of the deferred rents pending. Is there any indication as to when council will make that decision one way or the other? The resolution of that question is extremely worrisome to leaseholders.
Well, in the last couple meetings we've had with the leaseholders, and I'm going to be a little careful because I know it's a negotiation of sorts, so I don't want to reveal too much, but there's two things we're looking at. One is past rents, looking back and how we deal with past rents and squaring up the books one way or another, and then going forward. We've looked at a couple shorter term measures that we'll maybe bring into the council sooner than later, meaning probably, in the next couple, maybe before the end of the year. And putting off the deferred rent question for now until we get a little further through the pandemic. We've come out of red and we're in purple and things are opening up. And if we come out of purple and come out of red and go to whatever color's next, yellow, I think, and restaurants and others can start operating a little more indoors, that should start bringing more revenues. But we don't know where that's going to go, so we're the city and the group have sort of agreed that let's not jump to any conclusions too soon, because we don't know where we're going. The past rents are the past rents. we've lost a few businesses on the waterfront. No master leaseholders have gone under, and I don't, knock on wood, think any will. So we're okay holding on as it is. But we're going to have to resolve it one way or another, and that's obviously what's weighing heavy is, you know, if I've got a given leaseholder that owes $20,000, well, what's going to happen with that? So right now we're holding tight and trying to kind of pick at it one piece at a time. But to answer your question, the deferred rent question, whatever the payback of it is, whether it's full, half, whatever, we don't know yet. It's going to be over some period of time. And again, it's going to rely somewhat on how the pandemic progresses. And this winter, you know, as you know, there's all the talk of the second wave and whatnot and going into at least the northern hemisphere winter. What happens if it gets worse, gets better, if things ratchet down even further again and we're back to day one where we're shelter in place and nobody does anything except maybe takeout restaurants? That changes the playing field. So, and we don't know where we're going with that. So,
okay, thank you. So still prong one, item four, this is just an education for me. City Council taking action to affirm the state's emergency orders. Why would the city need to take independent action to affirm the state's COVID emergency orders?
I phoned a friend on that, the city manager. The federal government declared a disaster, an emergency or disaster. State governor did, and we followed suit. I think it just, the affirmation is we affirm that those two entities declared, and we're declaring too.
Yeah, it's more just extending the council's support for those measures. But all the authority lies at the state level, not the city level.
That's why I asked the question, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, pillar one, employee compensation. In your report, you've identified a number of employee entities that back in April agreed to take pay cuts between 5 and 8% through December 31. So that was in April. It's now October, 6 months later. Does anybody have any information as to why the fire union has not agreed to a cut?
We came to an agreement, a short-term agreement, just a few weeks ago. That was my apologies for not catching that in the staff report review. So we have come to a short-term agreement as we work towards a longer-term contract with the fire union on that front.
Retroactively?
It's not retroactive.
It's poor form. That's a personal commentary. Pillar two, last paragraph. Eric, how specifically is the harbor department, and you've touched on this in a variety of ways, but if you could just summarize for us, how specifically is the harbor department managing this current budget challenge?
Well, like I said, our duties and responsibilities haven't gotten any less. If anything, they've become more. Without that full-time position, I'll give a nod to Lori Stilt. She's taken probably the brunt of it because she's now running the front office as well as the back end. So doing administrative assistant work as well as her work. Becca's taken on some of that as well to try and relieve it. I've taken what I can, which isn't as much because I've still got, you know, the leases and all that budget and other stuff that I'm pretty darn busy with. So, and the patrol officers themselves are taking on more management responsibility and trying to, you know, we keep an officer in the front office more often now to answer phones, to just take the general calls and walk-in kind of stuff. So everyone's just putting on more hats and doing more to help out their fellow employees.
Okay, thanks. All right, Eric, back to you. FY 2021 and beyond, revenue update.
So FY 2021 and beyond, T TOT, so, you know, going into this fiscal year, we're a few months in now. The TOT, just a couple of benchmarks for you. TOT for July of 2020 was about 80,000 less than 2019, which largely follows, you know, what the happened last year with what we didn't receive. Sales tax, we're expecting a decrease. I've got 2.5 in the staff report. I just checked with the finance director today. That's been upticked to 3%, she thinks. So sales tax over the same period, down about 3%. We've seen largely, I get the feedback I'm getting from the leaseholders is largely along those same lines. Obviously, you know, TOT, we don't receive any TOT, but we receive revenues from percent gross from those that have hotels, but it's not a large number of our leaseholders that do that. But, you know, we've still got our leases are largely following the larger trend of the city. A lot of unknown factors. What's going to happen, as I spoke a minute ago, with how long this pandemic's going to go and what's going to happen this winter if things get ratcheted down even more. We really won't know other than anecdotal asking our leaseholders how they did. And I've got a couple that are pretty I talked to quite a bit, and you know, they relay to me, you know, how they've done this year versus last year, and so I get sort of a feel for it. But we really won't know until the next July when they tally up their year's totals and it comes in. But we'll have an idea, and we'll be keeping closer touch with our leaseholders throughout the year just so we kind of have a feel of how it's going. Slip fees are generally down. You know, our commercial slip fees aren't, because they're all our commercial fishing boats are still here for the most part. No one's left. Those numbers are still the same. But our transient boating-related revenues are down. Sort of the discretionary revenues, those that come passing through Morro Bay, they're down to a degree. So I think it's largely reflecting the 25% cut that we put in the budget. So hopefully it won't be any worse than that. So that's kind of where we're at on the revenue end. I'll get into the RV program here in the next item. We're estimating, you know, conservatively, once it gets fully established, if we fully establish it, we could get up to $250,000 in revenues out of that. City manager spoke of the parking study going on, and if that occurs, could see some revenues from that. But as I said, you know, most of those revenues don't just go into the general pot. They're used to do, you know, management of the system and then other services, related services. And then on the ballot in a few weeks here is the local relief and recovery measure, 1 cent sales tax, much like Measure Q, largely based on some polling that we did over the summer, or I think over the summer and fall, or spring and summer fall, with the residents of the city that you know, really prioritize public safety, cleanliness, and services that the city residents are provided. It's known as Measure E20, could generate up to about $2 million annually for the city to maintain those core services. And really, you know, the amount of sales tax, I think this is correct. City manager can correct me if I'm wrong, but of the sales tax, I think the general understanding is of the total sales tax received, about 70% comes from transient visitors, meaning tourism, and about 30% comes from residents. And so, you know, additional sales tax is a good way of recouping some of the costs that all those visitors put on our services. Scott, you want to add anything to that?
Yeah, the 70% is on the business to consumer sales portion of the sales and use tax. So that those are the things that you think of over the counter purchases, which is good because we've had a lot of day trippers come to town, and you know, our hotels have done okay, not as good as previous years, but a lot more visitors are coming for the day. And so when they spend money, they are, you know, helping us out through the sales tax and kind of trying, in some ways, recouping the costs they extract on our community in terms of things like our restrooms and trash. And we've seen a particularly uptick of an issue. As Eric said, we've had various forms of surveys been conducted pre and post COVID-19, and COVID ruled out aside, public safety services were top priority, and locally controlled public safety services, and then clean and safe public areas, in particular waterfront and beach areas, were a high concern for the community. Measure E is a general tax, but it's clear that, you know, if we have to make further cuts, the next level is definitely into those core public service, public safety issues. So we're looking to preserve the core services through this measure. This board is very well aware of the quality services that it provides to the city and the community, that being the harbor department. They provide important services related to public safety, as well as maintaining a clean and upkept waterfront beach, beachfront for both our visitors and our residents. And so we fully are aware of the critical nature of that and making sure we have adequate resources deployed to the harbor department to fulfill those objectives. And we've definitely shown in recent years that the need to look at that, most recently with the RV camping program, but also this summer we've allocated a lot more city general fund resources to the waterfront to maintain our public restrooms and our trash without impacting the harbor fund, which we know is, you know, in a tough spot, and definitely going to go make the case for paid parking if the analysis warrants that, which could help definitely help the harbor department. So, you know, that we are fully aware of the integrated nature between the harbor and the rest of the city. We need that area to look great, both for our residents and for our visitors. And we need to maintain those core public safety services in that area, and Measure E certainly could provide a hand in that effort.
And Ron, I'm going to add one more thing that Therese reminded me of, and it's on the council agenda, which should have posted today, in terms of programs we've got to help out our businesses. And this is citywide. There's a small business grant program going for city council consideration. I think it's looking at revenue from economic development fund we've got for small grants for businesses to recoup some of their costs for COVID related expenditures, you know, hard costs, again, PPE, putting screens up, you know, all the stuff they've done. So look to the city council agenda. That item should be up, and it has all the real details on that, and that would include our waterfront leaseholders as well. Any brick and mortar business in Morro Bay would be eligible for that.
Thank you. Eric, before you go to your conclusion, while we have Mr. Collins, I'm going to poll the HAB to see if they have any questions or comments about E20, because that's Mr. Collins was kind enough to take his time to be present for the relative to E20. Charisse? Can't hear you. You're muted.
Sorry, I turned it off and forgot. I don't have any direct questions about E20, but I did, since Scott is here, have one thing. Can I hold my thing until the other panelists have talked or asked?
Sure. Dana, E20?
No, I don't have any questions.
Okay. Lynn, E20? Lynn? Peter?
None.
Gene?
Yes. Is there a percentage of the E20 funding that will go directly to the harbor department?
No, that would be earmarking, which would create a special tax, which would require 66% voter approval to do so. But as I mentioned, we understand the critical nature of supporting the harbor department. And, you know, city council will make the decision about how those funds are utilized, but it's clear from the surveys where we need to deploy those resources, and that will help inform their decisions.
Thank you.
Yep.
As a follow-on question to that, Mr. Collins, what assurances do the voters have that E20 revenue will be applied to core services?
Yeah, what I foresee is that the Measure Q, or the Citizen Finance Advisory Committee, which will take on the Measure E oversight, if you will, would be the arbiters of that, like they have been for Measure Q. They've been very effective in saying, you know, the city set out to do this to support the fire station and to support enhanced services in certain areas, and provide that audit on the back end, and also make recommendations to city council during the budget creation process. So I foresee that the Citizen Finance Advisory Committee will continue to play that role as it is stated in the ballot measure itself. So I think that'll be the number one check, and then, you know, and then it's, you know, the voters holding city councils accountable to that, you know, via the elections. So that those are your two main checks on that. But as we said, you know, the next level of cuts would touch those core services if we don't get a new source of revenue soon.
Okay, thank you. If I recall correctly, and I could be wrong about this, Measure Q was targeted quite specifically on, to use your phrase, core services. And E20 is not, in fact, targeted specifically. So that constitutes a difference. Is that correct, or am I?
Measure Q, I think, had a non-binding resolution that may have been attached to it, which, again, you can't create any legal requirements to do anything. It was just sort of a, let's make sure that the community thinks this is how the money should be used, but it doesn't create a legally binding requirement. So that was a decision made in 2005 or 2006, whenever that was on the ballot, to do that. But again, it doesn't have a legally binding contract, or the city has to do those things. It's just a guiding document.
Okay, and Lynn, are you back with us?
I think so. Can you hear me?
Did you have any questions for Mr. Collins about E20?
Not directly about E20, but about core services regarding the harbor, within the harbor department.
Please.
Which of the services that the harbor department currently renders are considered core and which are not?
Yeah, a good question. I would assume the safety would be the highest import, so patrol and probably lifeguard services. But as we all know, almost everything we do is core and interconnected. So, again, real hard choices would have to be made. Already hard choices have been made. And as the staff report points out, we're down about 25,000 staff hours this year alone on the cuts we've made across the city. And we're feeling the impacts of that. But the next level will cut into the services that the community recognizes, not the things that are behind the scenes, which most of the cuts we've made this year, with a few exceptions, are in that realm. So, again, I think when I think of core, I think of those visible public safety services like harbor patrol and lifeguarding.
So that would sort of leave recreation as being the place where it would be.
Well, recreation, bore a big brunt of the cuts already. Most of the part-time staff were laid off, and their full-time staff, which was four members, is now cut in half to down to two. We have added back a few part-time staff to support the swimming service down at the high school, as well as daycare for central workers, so their kids can go to school with some supervision since the schools are closed. And the parents can work and earn an income. Those positions are paid for through fees, so it's not really affecting the general fund per se. So, you know, the next level, like I said, we've cut into finance, we've cut into public works administration, harbor obviously has been cut into, and planning is down a planner, engineering is down an engineer. And again, these are services the community typically doesn't see, but the next level would be in police and fire. So recreation has pretty much been completely reduced, almost cut, more than cut in half already.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Anything else, Lynn?
No.
Okay. So our
I think Dana had a question, sorry.
Dana?
If I could ask a question. You were just saying the next thing would be police and fire would be getting cuts, say we don't Measure E doesn't pass. I'm sure you, lots of analysis has been done on this. So I don't. I guess I'm asking what's the outlook if we don't get Measure E passed.
Yeah. I mean, it's a good question, Dan. I've been doing some analysis on that because you don't know. It could be very close. And the city budget does not have any funds from Measure E for this fiscal year, 2020-2021. So really, you'd be pointing at the budget process for the next fiscal year where you would say, okay, there is no new revenue or sufficient revenue. And based on the continued impacts from COVID and the other sort of drag on our budget prior to COVID, like the closure of the power plants and increases in fixed costs outweighing our revenue growth, you know, we've already cut into administration and some of the other non-core services. So really you're looking at eliminating firefighter and police officer positions. The fire department, if you cut one position, you basically are moving to the old model of one fire rig responding to a call. Uh-oh. You don't have a simultaneous call a capability, which we currently do. You have two guys in one truck and two guys in another. About 19% of our calls are simultaneous, which means when they respond to one call, another call comes in, they're able to break off if it's a non-fire call. It's a medical call, which 70% of our calls are. So that would show up in slower response times. And police would be, we would scale back the number of officers probably on duty over time. That's sort of what we're looking at, Dana. So, you know, we obviously aren't trying not to put all our eggs in one basket, and this RV program is one idea. Of course, that's really set out to support the Harbor Fund. But we do have other things we're looking at sort of as last-ditch emergency efforts like selling property, but those are one-time things you can call on. But then you have the lost opportunity costs in the future where you could maybe use those properties differently, you know, just to keep things running. But, you know, emergencies will deplete, reserves will deplete over the next couple of years if we don't see a change.
Okay, thank you.
Tough time to be a city manager, Mr. Collins.
Never dull.
Tough time. So thank you for your time. You're welcome to continue with us if you'd like, but if you...
Yeah, I might stick around for the RV discussion. Therese, did you have a question?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. I'm muted. Okay. One of the things that we have been able to do because of... Coastal giving us a little extra as far as COVID adapting was the seating outside for a lot of the Embarcadero restaurants, which greatly affected the ability for the harbor to gain some of their percentage rents. I know that it was only supposed to be for 6 months. I honestly don't know when it's up, but has anybody filed to extend that?
Yeah, great question. We just discussed this with Mr. Graham, our planning director today, our community planning director today, and he's in talks with coastal staff, kind of at the junior level. So we expect we'll be talking to the senior staff by next week. The thing runs out in November, so we're trying to stay ahead of that. I think they're fully aware of how important that outdoor dining has been to our businesses and to our visitors' enjoyment of their experience in Morro Bay. So I don't see any reason why they would prohibit the extension, and we're going to see if we can extend it several more months into next year so that we, we don't have to keep asking every couple months. So that would include the outdoor dining as well as the RV camping program.
Okay.
We fully intend to come back to this body and then obviously City Council to assess the successes and maybe shortcomings of the RV camping program so that we can have good data to provide Coastal Commission to see if we can make that a full-time program, which would require a regular coastal development permit.
on here.
Anything else, Cherise?
Nope, that was it.
So just as a comment, in a local coastal town today, we noted, my wife and I noted, that they had taken a portion of a street that was formerly two lanes and had made it one lane going one direction because there was plenty of opportunity in surrounding streets to go the other direction. And barricades were put up on center line, and there were, in that particular block, there were a number of restaurants, not unlike our Embarcadero. And the entire block, including the sidewalk and the blocked lane, was dedicated to outdoor dining. Eric, you want to conclude your agenda item number one?
I think, you know, the only thing left in there is, you know, sort of the, well, what ifs, and I think between myself and the city manager, we've answered much of that. You know, like I said, our budget is balanced this year, but just barely. We still don't know what's going to happen with the rest of the pandemic, and, you know, like I said, the cuts we made to the operating budget to save $110,000 were, you know, pretty austere cuts that aren't sustainable in the long run, and you know, if things continue and there's no relief, both from the pandemic and financially with additional new revenue or improved revenue sources, you know, we're looking at cuts to services. And you asked earlier, you know, what are the priorities? Well, I don't really want to daylight those yet, but, you know, cutting into public safety is probably going to be one of them. We'll just have to see what happens and where we end up going with it. So, you know, no one's been immune from it yet within the city, so... you know, police and fire are operating on pretty thin levels as well. So we'll just see how it goes throughout the rest of the year and how revenues bounce back and what the pandemic does to us.
Okay. Eric, agenda item number one, that's really important information for the HAB and certainly for the public. And it was very well presented. It was a cogent report. Thank you. Thanks for the time for the department for doing that.
Thank you. No problem.
Agenda item number two, update on status of the Waterfront RV Camping City Council 2019-2020 goal action item. Wow, there's a mouth.
That's only two lines. So the RV program got it going September 10th, I want to say, was the date when we finally went live. As you know, this is a council goal action item. It's, you know, investigate new and improved revenue sources, and RV camping, something we've been banging away at for a while now. Council approved it, Harbor Advisory Board approved it, and changed a few things in terms of where and how many. You know, what was okayed by the HAB and by the council was really five different locations. One, Coleman Park, where we are now, three spaces in there, out by the creek. We initially proposed, you know, kind of lining up against the edge of the creek. Coleman didn't like that, so we took what we call our baiter's yard, that storage yard we had out there by our shed, converted that over to nine spaces out there, seven combination RV or tent spaces in the triangle parking lot, five kind of behind the museum and two across from the museum. Coastal wanted to see tent opportunities there. We've had a few of those, not too many, but we've had a few. Another space we had gotten the tentative okay for was what we called the Target Rock area. And then the fifth space was out at the launch ramp in the launch ramp parking spaces for boaters to tow their boats with their RVs or trucks with campers and camp in them during the rock trip season and off season and allow RVs in there. When we started looking into doing the groundwork for the spaces at Target, we started looking, it was looking pretty heavy in terms of a lot of rock and a lot of uneven ground is going to be very expensive. And in the proximity to the otters and all the tourism that was occurring through there because of the high visitation of the waterfront, we said, nah, let's not do that. That's a little too much. And then down at the launch ramp, we've elected not to implement that yet, waiting to kind of see how it goes in the rest of the places. Assuming we get continued coastal approval of this into next year, likely the launch ramp will allow some RVs to park down the launch ramp parking lot, since rockfish season will be open and that ramp will be pretty much a ghost town. We've seen a huge number of RVs in town this summer. You know, obviously the pandemic shut down a lot of international travel, so people stayed domestic. And if you think of California, you think of two things, the mountains or the beach. Well, the mountains were a good option for a while until they all caught fire. And I don't say that lightly, but it drove a lot of people away from the mountains, and a lot of them now coming down to the beach. And then there was already an RV movement going on where a lot of people were starting to get into RVing before the pandemic started, and the pandemic has obviously reinforced that. And that, coupled with our previous fine for illegally camping in a non-RV park in the city, was pretty low. We recently upped that to $250. It's such a state that the police department had given a couple of tickets to some illegal campers at the Rock back in August. And one of them's comment was, great, we'll see you again tomorrow night for the ticket, because it was so much cheaper than just going to an RV spot. So that's all helped. And then we opened up our RV program, got it going on a pilot basis. Told you where the spots are. The first weekend, we've had a couple of weekends where we were completely full. We had all 19 spaces full. It's largely settled down to mostly weekends now. We've had a few fire refugees for a while, folks either escaping the smoke or they were in actual evacuation areas that were staying for, you know, a week or two. Those seem to have faded out. But, you know, we put some pretty robust regulations in place. Got good police backing on the enforcement. We've had a few little bumps in the road as we've gone. Nothing terrible. You know, mostly it's our rules and regulations that control a good amount of that. So we've done okay there, and people are falling into line. It's all online. You register to the app, through that Bonfire app I spoke of earlier. You pay online. People change their reservation. Sometimes they cancel. They have to come to us for that, and they'll either email us or give us a phone call, and it seems to be working pretty good. All our staff is involved with it, mostly patrol. You know, this was Dana Stein on our patrol staff was the lead on this that put most of it in place in terms of all the hardscape and helped with all the signage. So he's been, you know, fielding most of the issues. But so far, it's been doing okay. In their staff report, from a financial standpoint, the program, at least as of today, from a revenue standpoint, we have close to $18,000 in revenues. So again, that's from September 10th through today. On the expense end, expenses we're still trying to sort out where they all go, and so these numbers aren't 100% accurate, but it gives you a rough scale of where we are. I think we've spent somewhere in the neighborhood of about $20,000 to $22,000, and so we're coming close to a break-even point, and that mostly was in groundwork, site preparation, smoothing things out and putting down some road base to make flat spots. Spent a few thousand dollars on graphics and signage, creating the signs. We've got a look to it. If you've seen it, it's kind of a hexagonal shape that says Waterfront Camping. Everything, you know, as you know, if you're going to run a business, you got to brand it and get your logo out there. And so we've gotten that out there, and that had some cost to it. Spent about $1,000 on picnic tables. We bought frames and then built the lumber tops to those and put those in all our spots. So, and then we're paying, over to TOT, we pay 10% in TOT. So some of that cost is in TOT and the tourism marketing district, the county's, basically the county's TBID. So we lose 11.5% of our revenues to that. And then the credit card company takes a little cut, as most credit card companies do. So a little bit gets skimmed off the top, and we spent about $1,500 on the app that controls it, the Bonfire app that everybody registers through. So, you know, we've gotten all the hard costs out of the way. You know, I have no doubt we'll break even with all of our hard costs at the end of the pilot program. Even if it ends December 31st, I think we'll be okay. And then with the pilot program ends, we'll see how it's done. See how it does. We had an initial fair amount of negative backlash or negative commentary on the program. As if any of you are on the Nextdoor website, you probably saw it. That's largely died down. I think a lot of it, fair amount of it, folks just didn't understand what it was, why it was, how it was, where it was, and so just either calling those folks back or emailing them back alleviated or assuaged a lot of those concerns and fears. But there's still some concern out there in the community, and I understand it. So we're doing our best to be up front with all of our campers and make sure that they're toeing the line and they're not having big parties or trying to have big fires and trashing the place so far. Like I say, knock on wood, we've done okay. At the end of our pilot program, so probably come, depending on whether we get extensions. So come the end of the year, we'll start really looking at what the problems are, see what the revenues are. You know, once we really get a solid handle on the booking end of it, we're still learning it. We'll see if it's developed an unacceptable level of negative impact to the community or others. I'm sure we'll run it through the Harbor Advisory Board at some point. And then we'll determine whether or not we're going to try and make it permanent. As the city manager spoke earlier, we're on an emergency coastal development permit right now. We'd have to get a full coastal development permit, which is the full coastal process. So if it looks like it's something we want to pursue in the future, and the council approves doing that, we'll go to coastal and we'll see where we get with it.
Okay, thank you. Questions, comments, Gene?
Yes, two questions. Are the fees more than the local RV parks? And the second question is, will the Harbor Department have a chance to submit their concerns for a full Coastal Commission approval to the Coastal Commission?
On your second question, second part of your question, because that's a little more interesting one to answer, obviously, if we're going to go forward with it to coastal, we're going to want to put our best foot forward. And I would assume part of that is going to be going to coastal and saying, here's the problems we experienced, here's how we addressed them, here's how we intend to address them. And so that would be part of the process, yes, if that answers your question, Gene.
Well, I'm just curious whether it'll be an agenda item that we can talk about.
Oh, I anticipate at some point when we bring our summary back to see if we're going to move forward, we will bring it through the HAB. And we'll bring, and I guess maybe your question was, is the Harbor Patrol going to show up at that HAB meeting and give you their input? Potentially, yeah.
I was concerned whether the Harbor Advisory Board will have a chance to comment.
If I have anything to say about it, yes. I think what we're going to want to do is run our summary through, what our findings are, what our staff recommendations are through the Harbor Advisory Board, and have the Harbor Advisory Board take a position and make a recommendation or an advice to the city.
That's what I was asked, yes.
Yeah, okay.
Gene, it'll be put on the agenda once the summary is complete.
Okay.
Yes, I would foresee the Harbor Advisory Board making a recommendation to the City Council.
Fine, thank you.
And what was the first part of your question? I totally forgot.
The fees for the camping.
Yes. Yeah, the fees, we purposefully established them above what you can get here in town in Morro Bay. Morro Dunes, the other ones out on 41 by the high school. State parks, we're dry. We have no hookups, no amenities other than the picnic table, and our fantastic view, which is our selling point.
Okay, thanks.
Our two prices are $65 for, $75 for the Coleman Beach sites or the Coleman Park sites, and $65 for all the rest. Everybody else dry is about no hookups is like $45 to $50.
Thank you.
Peter?
Yes.
Questions, comments on this agenda item?
None at this time.
Lynn?
Nothing. Thank you.
Dana?
Dean's question pretty well covered my.
Okay. Charisse?
No questions.
Okay. Eric, how is the program being promoted? I mean, marketed.
As of right now, we have not engaged in a large marketing program. We're starting to look at where we need to start going next. You know, we put it on the city's website. It's pretty prominent. That Bonfire app or program itself is pretty widely used in the RV world, so we just have sort of a natural affinity to, for people to find us that way. We put up our signage, you know, as you know, we see a lot of people just driving to town in RVs. We've got our signage out now in our three spots, and so we have that kind of advertisement, but we're working on identifying, and it's mainly online websites where you get yourself advertised at GoRVing.com and those sorts of places. We're starting to look at those and figure out where we want to get ourselves and how we want to get ourselves marketed on those.
What other potential sites, camping sites, have been identified other than the launch ramp?
Well, other than the rock, you know, which we as a HAB, as you know, we looked at that over by the intake or the outfall structure. And then Target Rock, we've, you know, on the waterfront, there really isn't much else other than, I mean, there's some spots we've talked about internally, you know, as you know, and this is just internal talk of, you know, potential other spaces. You know, we get right across from our office parked along the road, you know, until we put up more signage and increased the fine, we were getting a lot of people camping right across just parking parallel on Embarcadero from our office. So, you know, some of our staff have talked about that. Maybe that could be a discount spot along there, along the road. It's more for a person coming through RVing, but haven't identified any other spaces really in town. Haven't really thought about it.
Do I recall that at one point when the HAB was discussing this with the department that we identified that by the outfall, that strip along the outfall up against the base of the rock, that there were five potential spots or something like that?
Yeah, I want to say it was four, but it might have been five. Okay. And the HAB recommendation was not, was supportive of the program in general, but not that location. The rock being the most sensitive spot to, for RVs to park at, folks didn't want to see it there.
Okay. Is there any information, does the department have any information regarding how much revenue is produced from those kinds of sites in Port St. Louis?
I want to say it's $300,000 a year, maybe more.
Yeah, you can find it pretty easily on their information, on their website.
Their total revenue?
Well, it seems that I've looked into that before, and I didn't have any trouble finding that information out.
Okay.
But it was quite significant.
$300,000 is probably way conservative. It's probably closer to $500,000. It's a lot.
But we don't know how many slots.
Yeah, they have
a lot more than us.
Yeah, they have a whole lot. They have an upper terrace area now, and they have all across the road. And then in the parking lot, which they used to, back in the day, they used to haul out boats and set them over there.
And as you know, they're getting underway on their Harbor Terrace project, which eventually all those RV spots down on the waterfront, at least I think most of them go away and get placed up in that project.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's interesting.
I mean, that's years out for completion.
Where, Eric, if the citizens of Morro Bay wanted to acquaint themselves with the rules and regulations for this program, where would they go to see them, to find them?
Go onto the city's website, and should be pretty front and center, that waterfront camping blue and white logo, hexagon. You click on that, and it takes you to another page within the city's website, and scroll down, and there's an active button there, a hyperlink there that'll link you to the rules and regulations. And you also get it if you go to the if you go book now and you go to the booking, the Bonfire booking website, there's also a link to it in there as well. But on the city's website, you should be able to find it fairly easily.
Okay. All right. Thank you. So that brings us to agenda item number 3.
Hi, guys. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for your time.
Appreciate your time.
Item three. So you probably all got this email from Lieutenant J.G. Gabrielle Lamartina from the Coast Guard because she addressed it to the HAB. And so about every 10 years, the Coast Guard does what's called a WAMS, a Waterways Analysis and Management System Survey, where they poll local boaters and users of waterways and aids to navigation and just see how they like them and don't like them and what might be needed and whatnot. And so they do these surveys all around the country, and it's been about 10 years since we've done one. So they sent an email to the HAB and asked for the board's input. And so I thought we'd make a staff report out of it and basically ask the questions and go through the survey and provide the Coast Guard with some collective answers from an advisory body. That's not to say everybody that uses the waterways shouldn't go online to the Coast Guard, and there's a link here, I hope, somewhere. I put a link in the staff report. There's a staff report in the conclusion where you can go. It's on a SurveyMonkey kind of survey, so it's pretty easy, pretty intuitive. And go do it yourself, but I thought I'd take the collective input of the HAB and provide that to the Coast Guard.
Well, that's a good idea. Not just the HAB. It strikes me that you could ask the Yacht Club to do it as well. I don't know. The fishermen come and go, are mostly transient, if you will. And by that, I mean when they come in and they go to their docks, and when they leave their docks. I don't know if we could enlist the participation of the Commercial Fishermen's Organization, but there are 23 questions. Was it your intention to poll the board for each one of these questions? If so, my suggestion is that I ask the board over the next few days to respond to this, and we will collate the responses. That's a suggestion. How would you like to proceed? Also, Lynn, well, before I turn this over to Eric to respond, Lynn, are you there? Hello, Lynn. Apparently not, but okay.
She's there on the screen, and if she's not muted.
How would you like to proceed?
Well, I mean, you make an interesting point. I hadn't thought about it. I mean, I looked at the questions and put in italics, you know, what we'd be asking the HAB, and say 23 questions. I don't want to spend a couple hours doing this, so I don't want to kill everybody's time doing that. I don't know how quickly we could move through it. We could do it as you suggest. I think what I'd ultimately like to give to the Coast Guard would be the HAB's collective input. It's not something. I mean, there could be some discussion on some items in terms of, you know, what aids of navigation you think should go away. There could be a little back and forth, and the HAB could collectively decide on something. I don't see the HAB needing to vote on any of these things. You know, it's more of a general input from a body. Like number 15, which aids are least important to you for safe navigation of these waterways? Well, what if, you know, three of you think one thing and three of you think another? Do we have to vote on it? I don't think so.
That's not what I had in mind. I mean, we've done this sort of thing in the past, and we created a matrix, a response matrix, which I'm perfectly willing to facilitate. This is a worthwhile thing, and not only that, there's larger purposes to this than just these folks collecting this information. It has to do with their commitment to navigation support and all sorts of things. So,
Brian, can I ask you a question?
Of course.
Have you answered your questions?
I have answered my questions.
Has the rest of the board answered their questions?
No, I have not.
I have.
Yes, I have.
Yes, I have.
Pete.
I have done this before, though.
So Gene, what is
if
your...
If Eric can take a tally right now, we may be able to knock this off right away.
All righty.
Yeah, I think we can knock this out pretty quick, so I'll just...
So, Eric, why don't you, for each one of these, why don't you just poll us?
Yeah, that's what I'll do, and I'll just write some quick notes, and then I'll ask you sometime in the next week, send me your written stuff, too, that you did, just so I make sure I've got it.
Okay.
So, how many have members on the vessel?
You need to poll us, okay?
Yes.
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 I have five of them.
Yes.
So we still have everybody here. Is Mark still here?
Mark owns a boat.
Okay. How many years have you owned it?
Gene.
50.
How many years?
Gene, 50. Dana.
40.
Ron.
This particular boat, 6 years.
Lynn.
That's collectively.
This says it's operated in Morro Bay. If it's operated in Morro Bay 20 years, if it's how many years have I owned it, it's 42 years.
Yeah, no, it says operated in Morro Bay. Let's read the question.
Yeah, there's a qualifier there.
Well, let's read the questions, okay?
All right.
Yeah.
So I know how many have members on a vessel. How many years collectively have those vessels been operated in Morro Bay / San Luis Obispo? So I'm just going to go across. I'm just going to read from my screen. Local waters. Dana.
40.
40. Ron.
Six.
Six. Charisse, you don't have a boat.
I had one that I operated in Morro Bay. And
so how many years?
I would say six.
Okay. Lynn.
26.
Mark.
I think the answer, Mark, is, if I remember correctly, it's two or three.
Okay. Peter.
22.
Okay. Question two. How many years experience do you have operating Morro Bay San Luis Obispo waters? So, Dana, how many years have you been operating a boat here?
40.
Ron.
15.
Charisse.
Zero. Well, what's the question again? I'm sorry.
How many years experience do you have operating in Morro Bay?
Zero. Zero.
Lynn.
26.
Peter.
Eric, I have to backtrack. Current vessel, 9 years. Total years in Morro Bay, 22.
Okay. Gene.
50.
And Gene, did I ask you on question number one? I don't think I got your...
Same number.
50, yeah, I missed that somehow. Okay. Number three. How many have a Coast Guard license? Anybody?
Non-current.
No.
No.
Yeah, non-current 100, but it's not a current.
California boaters card.
No.
But nobody's got a current license.
Coast Guard license? No.
Coast Guard license.
No.
Wow.
No.
It takes care of four.
That takes care of four. Five.
Takes care of five, too.
List the information. I'll get this stuff from you later. Length, draft, beam, primary use, cargo. I don't need to pull you for that. I'll get that from you.
Length, draft, beam, and use, and cargo.
Yeah, I'll get that from you individually. I know that's worth going through everybody. Length, draft, beam, all that stuff. Agreed?
Yeah. You just send out an email. Yeah.
Okay. How many Harbor Advisory Board members operate here year-round?
Yes.
Everybody?
Everybody.
Yes.
Zero.
So I guess if you operate year-round, you also operate in the spring and the summer and the fall and the winter. So that's everybody, right?
Yeah.
Nobody's a summer sailor, a winter sailor, a fall sailor, a spring sailor.
Everybody. I'm an armchair sailor.
Everybody's year-round except Charisse.
Okay. So I have a question. Because
sure.
I have a jet ski, and I have to have it licensed. Are they considering that a vessel or not a vessel?
That is a vessel.
Okay, then can we go back to number 2 and put it at like 8? And then if you want to do the number 6, it would be spring, summer, fall, not winter for me.
Okay. Jet ski, huh? Okay, number 7. What methods and tools do you use for navigation in these waters? How many use paper charts?
Aye.
Yes.
Aye.
That's everybody? All 6?
Well, why don't you just ask the question in the negative. How many people do not? It's going to be easier.
Okay. How many people don't use electronic charts?
I don't use them.
I don't.
No.
I don't.
Sorry
I do.
For that theory.
That didn't work out too well.
Let's go the other way. How many use electronic charts?
I do.
There's 2. Peter and Ron.
I just bought one, so yes.
Oh, Gene. Wow.
I know.
How many use ECDIS? I don't even know what ECDIS is.
No.
No.
I know what it is, and no, I don't use it.
What is it?
It's it's an electronic notification.
No. 0. How many of you have a gyro compass? Nobody. Peter, you don't have a gyro compass for your self-steering?
No autopilot on my boat.
How many use a magnetic compass? I'm assuming everybody.
I do.
Yes.
Except Charisse.
Yes.
When I had a boat, I used it.
Jet ski doesn't count. No compass on that.
Yes.
How many of you use radar?
Yes.
Peter?
Yes.
Len?
Where's Len?
I didn't hear the question.
Do you have a radar, Len?
GPS?
Radar.
Radar.
No.
No radar.
No radar.
How many don't use GPS?
I have, but I don't anymore. So what's that mean?
What tools do you use for navigation?
Okay, I would say yes.
Okay. Sat-nav. Who has a sat-nav?
We gave them away.
0. Yeah, it's like Loran. Oh, here, Loran's coming back. Visual bearings.
Yes.
Just all keep your eyes closed.
Yes.
Who doesn't use visual bearings?
Pedometer.
Yes.
Everybody. Except Charisse, because she doesn't have one on her jet ski.
Jet ski.
Local knowledge.
Yes.
Yeah.
All 6. Other, anybody else have?
Yes. Dead Reckoning.
DR. That's visual bearings, isn't it?
Yes.
Sort of.
Yeah. Charts, compass, Dead Reckoning.
No.
Yeah.
No, okay. It is not.
I have a tariff log. Does that count?
Yes.
Lynn is correct. Dead Reckoning is something entirely different. She's quite correct.
Okay, what method is your primary means for navigation? Your one primary means.
So let's do a poll, okay?
Yep. Dana.
Visual.
GPS.
Ron.
GPS and electronic charts.
Oh, primary.
Charisse.
Visual.
Yeah.
Who was that?
Lynn,
visual. Charisse.
Visual.
Peter.
GPS.
Gene.
Local.
What? Local knowledge?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Do you have or you have a familiarity with the automatic identification system, AIS? Yes. How many yes?
You skipped number nine.
Nine. What is your primary means of communication?
VHF.
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 All right, I'm going to say that's five because, Therese, you got a VHF radio on your jet ski?
No.
I'm going to use HF. Peter, you got HF on that rig?
No.
Cell phones.
Don't count. Are you familiar with AIS?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, I do carry a cell phone. Yes.
That's not HF. That wasn't on the question.
Okay.
Are you familiar with AIS, Automatic Identification System? How many yeses?
Yes.
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 That's three.
Okay.
You ask me if I know what it is or do I use it?
Do you use or do you have familiarity with?
I do not. I know what it is, but I don't use it.
Yeah, I know what it is, but I don't use it either.
Well, you're familiar with it then.
Yes, I'm familiar with it.
So that's fine.
You're on your cell phone, an app.
All right, okay. Number 12.
Number 11.
What?
Number 11.
Oh, I'm going to try to get ahead.
This time, please poll us one at a time.
Okay. I guess this really only applies to Peter.
Yes, I do. Primary locations, Morro Bay Fish, the boat ramp, the storage yard.
Ron, would you say this applies to recreational boating? I would say not.
I would say not.
This is for commercial operations. Anybody else operate commercially besides Peter?
It isn't a clear question, but it does imply commercial.
I copied the questions directly. Okay. I'm just going to call it commercial. Number 12, and I'll pull you individually. Does the weather wind make it more difficult to navigate in this area? If so, how and how often? So, Dana, does it make it more difficult?
Yeah, until you get used to it. Yes.
How?
It's like sailing in a river.
Current.
Current. In the bay.
Sorry, that's 15.
Current, wind, precipitation, visibility.
No, current is number 13. Sorry. Does the weather, wind, make it more difficult in this area? I'm going to say no.
So you have all the visibility you need all the time?
No, I do not.
Then visibility is an issue.
Okay, I changed my answer to yes.
This is going to be a long night.
We're almost halfway here.
Okay, so yes, visibility. How often? Occasionally?
Yeah, occasionally.
So the often part will say never occasionally. Never occasionally, all the time.
Yeah.
Okay, Ron. Yes, no?
Yes.
How?
Wind and visibility. Occasionally.
Perfect. Charisse?
I'm going to say no. I just don't go.
Lynn.
We seem to have lost Lynn.
Hey, Peter.
Yes. Fog and tide.
How often?
Nowadays, more often than ever. But I would say, percentage-wise, 30+.
Okay.
Yes, tide, wind, and fog, wait for no man.
What happened to concrete?
I didn't put in women either.
Tide, wind, fog. How often?
Half the time.
Okay. And we've lost Lynn, so we'll lose Lynn. Okay. Number 13. Do the tides and currents make it more difficult to navigate in the area? Dana?
Yes.
How often?
50% of the time.
Seldom, occasionally, all the time.
Occasionally.
Occasionally. Okay. And how, I'm just going to assume how means you get crashing another boat. That's pretty easy. Ron, yes, no?
Yes, occasionally.
Therese?
Yes, occasionally.
Peter?
Yes, occasionally.
Gene?
Yes, occasionally.
And no winds back. Okay, number 14. Which aids are most important for you to operate safely in these waterways? So remember, the aids are the channel markers in the bay, the harbor entrance buoy outside, a couple buoys out by Mouse Rock, one out by Point, whatever that point is, Point, not Point Estero, Point, Vegas Point, Point Bouchon. Those are our aids to navigation. And yeah, foghorn, lights, all that stuff. So I'm just going to make a collective list. Dana, most important.
I mean, are you saying one specific mark or all of them?
Can no, it just says which aids are most important to you. So pick your most important.
I would say the buoys, the lighted ones.
Ron.
Markers and buoys.
Charisse.
Buoys.
Peter.
Most important.
Yep.
The approach buoy at the harbor entrance. After that,
E-buoy.
Harbor markers, channel markers as you proceed down the harbor.
Okay.
Yeah.
So buoys again, but you got more specific. Gene.
Buoys and channel markers.
Okay. All right. 15. Which aids are least important? Remember, we got buoys, we got foghorns, we got lights.
No.
Dana, least important.
Notice to mariners.
It's not an aid.
Oh, okay.
Good answer, though.
Least important. Gosh, I don't know. Go to somebody else.
Ron.
None are least.
Least. Which are least?
None are least.
Oh, none. They're all important.
Can you say that? I'll say that, too.
You can say that.
Okay, that's my answer.
Charisse.
And those are the only three options as far as aids go? Are there any other aids that we don't know about because they're that unnecessary?
Well, that's a good question. Which aids are most important in these waterways? Which aids are least important? I view an aid to navigation as a buoy, a light, a gong on a buoy, a bell on a buoy, a foghorn. Those are the aids to navigation. But is GPS, charts, those are aids to navigation, radar? No. I think they're talking about the physical stuff the Coast Guard puts in the water and on the jetties.
Then I would agree that all of them are important. And I wouldn't want to put any of them on a lease thing as if they're going to take it off or not or maintain it.
Yeah, and there's not a lot of aids to navigation out here. Peter?
I agree with everybody else. I don't think there is anything that's least important, but if I was to be put on the spot, for me personally, it would be the aids of navigation at the backside of the bay.
I mean, I guess you could go to the granular level and, you know, like they removed the 10E buoy. Remember that one that was off the
beach? I do. Yeah.
You know, that.
Let's just stick with none, okay?
Okay.
Yeah, stick with none.
Gene.
Is there a range marker coming into the harbor?
No. One's been talked about, but there isn't.
And I've seen none. They're all important.
Okay. 16. In your opinion, are the AIDS navigation system currently adequate in these waterways? Dana, yes or no?
Yes.
Ron, yes or no?
Yes.
Charisse, yes or no?
Yes.
Peter, yes or no?
I have some input from other members, but personally, I would say yes.
I'm just wondering if there's a place to put that.
And Eric, I could follow up with you going back to the beginning of this section, but for now, I'll say yes.
Okay, I'll collect that. We'll collect those. But there's probably somewhere in these last questions to insert that. Why do you think it's inadequate? So in your membership, I think it's important to collect it. So let's get okay. It. Yeah. Gene?
Are the front channel markers or buoys lighted?
They're lit through number 10.
Then I say that they are adequate for now.
Eric, let's go back on 16. Let me go back and ask Peter a question. Peter, do you think that the entrance from the ocean side, do you think the entrance is adequately marked?
I do.
Okay. Eric, go ahead.
And maybe we'll get those comments from your membership here in these next questions. So that's 16.
We have Lynn back.
Lynn, are you there?
Yeah.
Okay, we're on question 17. I will get your... Did you write down your answers to all these things?
Yes.
Okay, well, I will collect your 1 through 16 later.
Okay.
So we're on 17.
17 is yes.
In your opinion, so I'm going through people one at a time.
Oh.
17, in your opinion, will the AIDS navigation system in these waterways still be adequate 10 years from now? Dana, yes or no?
Yes.
Ron?
Yes.
Charisse?
Yes.
Lynn?
Yes.
Peter?
Yes.
Dean?
Yes.
Wow. Okay, 18. Do you feel that the AIDS navigation in this area effectively mark any navigational hazards and best water routes? Yes, no, and then if it's a no, I'll ask you to explain. So,
yes.
Yes or no? Dana?
Yes.
Ron?
No, from the ocean side. If it's... if visibility is very poor and the sea is up, coming in from the ocean side, this is a professional commentary, is challenging.
Okay, so the sea buoy and the number 2 then, the harbor entrance buoys basically.
Yeah, well, actually outside. Inside is fine. Once you come in, you're fine, but outside.
Okay. Charisse, yes or no?
Yes.
Lynn, yes or no?
Yes.
Peter, yes or no?
Yes, with some input from members, Eric, which I'll follow up with you on that.
Okay, so that's sort of a no then.
Yeah.
And I'll get that info from you later. Gene, yes or no?
Thank you.
Yes.
Okay, put some quick notes here. Hang on.
Some publications?
19. Do you feel the charts and publications for this area are adequate? meaning, I guess, the paper charts and the notice to mariners and whatnot. Yes or no? And if no, explain. Dana, yes or no?
Yes.
Ron?
Yes.
Therese?
N-A.
Lynn? Lynn, charts and publications adequate?
We don't have charts, and we really don't have publications. They're all online, and yes, they are adequate.
Well, those are still charts. They're just electronic charts now. So it's a yes. Peter?
Yes.
Electronic charts, yes.
Gene?
Yes.
Okay. New page. Hang on. Funny, almost there. Do you keep a U.S. Coast Guard light list on board your vessels? Paper copies of this are no longer available, but they can be obtained. So do you keep a light list on your boat? What's a light list? It lists all the aids to navigation, not just lights. Yes or no? Dana?
No.
Ron?
Yes.
Therese?
No.
Jet ski? No. Lynn?
Yes.
Peter?
No.
Gene?
No.
Okay. 21. Do you view the local notice to mariners, the NOTAMs? There's four options here. Yes, no, I don't know how to find them, and I don't know what that is. Dana?
No.
No. Ron?
Yes.
Therese?
No.
Lynn?
Yes.
Peter?
Yes.
Gene?
Yes.
Okay. 22. I guess this is where maybe some of Peter's input could come in. What other aids navigation would you like to see added or removed from these areas, and why? Dana, any takeouts or put-ins?
Well, they were just talking about other than buoys and sounds and everything. They're talking about charts and everything, and I like to see the charts come back, paper charts.
Paper charts. Ron?
Additional marking on the ocean side.
So that ocean comment again, okay.
It's actually a good idea.
Therese?
Nothing to add.
Lynn?
I agree with Dana, the return of paper charts. But they are available if one wants to go seek them out.
Yeah, find somebody still got them in stock.
That's one.
Peter?
Well, here comes the input from other members of the association, Eric. One member in particular mentioned an additional pair of buoys between the turning buoy adjacent to pump house and the next set of buoys at Target Rock, meaning one more set between Target Rock and the turning buoy that's essentially in front of your office.
So the one on the corner is number 8, the red one. The next one seaward is number 6, so something between 6 and 8.
Yeah. One member asked for an additional pair of red and green somewhere between those two.
Okay.
There's a big gap there. That's I'm just moving ahead here. The second member mentioned the permanent channel marker. He called it a concrete piling.
Yes,
those piles. That is I think adjacent to and south of the yacht club.
That's number 14.
Thank you, Eric. Number 14. He asked that additional reflective material be mounted on it and possibly a better radar reflector after two members have had a mishap there.
In response
to Ron's concern about the entrance, I've wondered, this is sort of old school, Eric, so I'm going to run it past you. entrances that have a set of range lights really that can be really beneficial in lining up for the entry into a harbor. Right. And I've, you know, with the exception of all the town lights in the background, I wonder how effective it would be. But a set of range lights is always a big aid if you're trying to come in questionable conditions. Mm-hmm. That's my opinion.
Yeah, we've looked at that in the past. Yeah. Okay. Your comment on the number 14 reflectors and radar, I think that's probably something I'm just going to bring to the local Coast Guard and have them talk to their AIDS navigation folks, because that should be – I don't think that's a waterway survey thing. I think that's probably deficient in either the – I don't know what they – I mean, it's a big steel pole, so I don't know how much more radar reflective you can be, but maybe the reflective stuff may just be worn out.
But if I may comment, Eric, on that, number 14, he mentioned that a couple of his people, the fishermen, had a problem with that.
Yep.
I have had two or three transients have a problem with that in the last year and a half.
And it's because it's not showing up on radar, or it's not having enough reflectivity?
I can't tell you why. I can only say that at least two boats have run into it.
Okay.
And another one.
Can I weigh in? About it. Can I weigh in here real quick?
Yeah, absolutely.
I think the cause of the problem with our guys was very close to nil visibility and fog, and the actual number 14, is it, was lost in the clutter of all of the moorage and everything else around it. I think may have been the problem, but I'm guessing at this point.
I think that's correct. I'm going to guess as well, but I think that's correct. It is difficult to pick out, depending upon the resolution that you have on your radar, it's difficult to pick out when you're coming in against the mooring.
No, I agree. Especially you, whatever direction you're coming from, you're viewing it with all the boats behind it to some degree. And in the case of the yacht club, the boats that are all around it.
But also an additional comment that. The triangle on it was displaced. It was bent around, and the two signs were at right angles to one another for a while.
Okay. Well, I'm going to personally go look at that, but I think that's a thing I'll bring to the local AIDS navigation folks and just have them come do some work on it. They're always looking for an excuse to come here. But okay. That's good input. Any other stuff, Peter?
No, thank you.
Gene, anything on what other aids would you like to see added or subtracted?
I like the idea of having range lights, and I also like to have them keep the flags that they raise.
The what?
The flags done by the Coast Guard Storage Building.
Oh, okay. The weather flags?
Yeah.
The warning flags, yes.
Yeah, they just started doing those again. As you know, our weather mask deteriorated and actually fell over, but
I think it's a good visual for somebody to see right away and make a decision.
Yeah. So the Coast Guard's now doing those lights and flags. So okay. Other anything else anybody wants to add? No problems you see with this waterway? Suggestions for improving it? Attached sketches? Any other things? Nobody's raising their hand. Seeing none. Done. That wasn't too bad. 20 minutes.
Okay. Anything else on that agenda item?
That's it. I will still ask you for your individual input. Just email it to me or come by the office, slip it in the mailbox, whatever you've written down, just make a copy of it. That gives me some information. That'd be great.
Okay.
Thank you all.
All right. In a special meeting, if I recall correctly, there is not an opportunity to declare a future agenda item, so the next thing would be a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Can I make one quick comment first?
Of course.
In the past years, the last 20 or 30 or 40 years I've been on the bay, there has been lots of eelgrass that would break off in the fall. For the last 10 years, I have not seen much grass of eelgrass. This year, I've seen more eelgrass breaking off from the back bay and drifting down the bay in large rafts. Most I've seen in the last 10 or 15 years. I think that's a good sign.
It is. The NEP's in touch with them on a fairly regular basis, and they are seeing an increase as well. And they're still trying to figure out why it all died off a few years ago, but and then I was trying to figure out why it's coming back. But no, that's good. That is a good thing.
Yeah, Gene, are you there?
Yes.
I noticed in Avila with this most recent south swell, quite a bit of eelgrass has pushed up on the beach there that broke loose in the swell. So I think they're seeing an increase in Avila as well.
Well, I think it's all good.
Yeah. I can attest, actually, I just did a job out there in Avila, and I can attest to that. The guys were talking about it. Yeah. Well, Mother Nature is mysterious.
Strange and wondrous ways.
Okay, so there's a motion to adjourn. We need a second.
I'll second.
Okay.
Too late.
Moved and seconded. Any discussion? Hearing none. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? None. So thank you for your time, Eric. Thank you. And Lori and Eric, thank you for doing this. There was a lot of time put into this, and we're very appreciative.
Thank you. Everybody, have a good night.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye now.
Thank you. Good night. Bye.
Thank you, Zeke.